Session number 9965, reel 4.
Mr. Dimery, reel 4. Was there any noticeable difference in your work around the time of D-Day?
Well, now you mentioned it, we did go to rather a lot of aerodromes that we had not normally been to. Aerodromes which were collecting large numbers of Dakotas, which were used for towing gliders and such like. Stirlings, they were also used for towing gliders. And, yes, we went to unusual aerodromes in that respect. But, of course, nobody knew when D-Day was supposed to be taking place. Although one of my colleagues did say he knew the actual date of D-Day. I didn't believe him, and I had a bet with him. I said, oh, you can't possibly know. He said, I do. I asked him when, and he wouldn't tell me. And I said, well, all right, I tell you what, we'll have a bet on it, if you like. And the arrangement was that if he was right, I would pay him. If he was wrong, he would pay me. But it'd have to be a matter of trust, because he wasn't going to tell me the date. And it so happened that on June the 5th, I suppose it was, or the night of June the 4th, we were in Maidenhead at midnight, and there was a tremendous amount of air activity immediately overhead, something that we'd never heard before, the type of activity we'd never heard before. And my colleague said to me, right, Tim, he said, your bet's won or lost by tomorrow morning. The following morning, I was up around about 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and on the radio, it said something to the effect that German shore batteries were shelling British ships in the English Channel. I went down to breakfast, and later on, I think at 9 o'clock, they confirmed on the radio that the invasion had in fact taken place. I saw my colleague getting on the bus that morning, around about 9 o'clock, and I gave him the proceeds of the bet. I said, okay, Roy, you've won your bet. Oh, has it started, he said, because he hadn't heard the radio. Yes, I said, it started. I said, how did you know? Well, he said, I've known for about a fortnight or 3 weeks. He said, I heard some loudmouthed person speaking in the mess about a particular date when they had to be ready for activities, which, to be quite honest, rather shook me when I heard something like that, because it was the kind of secret that presumably everybody kept their mouth shut about. Yes.
Did you have to organise flights to assist with the invasion?
No. Apart from taking large numbers of Dakotas and Stirlings to these various drones where the invasion force was being collected together. But no, apart from that, not that I can recollect anything unusual.
Were you ever asked to fly to Europe?
I wasn't, but some of our lads were, yes. Some of our lads did go. I don't know that they actually delivered anything. They probably went scrounged a trip over there. In fact, one of them died. He was in an Anson which flew into some cables crossing the Rhine, I believe, and he was killed. He was a flight engineer. Yes.
Did you assist in the delivery of any other special aircraft for special reasons?
Well, the point was, when we picked up aircraft, as far as we were concerned, they were just aeroplanes for the war effort. But occasionally, some of them were obviously rather special. They'd have all sorts of aerials stuck on them, and there'd be rather special equipment inside. I remember one day going to Woodford with the pilot to pick up Sir Lancaster to take to Scampton. When we got there, this particular Lancaster that I was to assist in delivery of had a huge gap underneath the fuselage. The bomb doors had been removed, and it just looked an odd shape. And I said to one of the ground crew at the time, "They don't fly like that, do they?" And he sort of said, "Well, our pilots fly them." So I didn't argue, and that was that. So we took these aircraft over. I took three of them, actually, over the next day or two to Scampton. And we found out afterwards that they had, in fact, been used on the famous Dambusters raid. There were 18 of them in all. And I think about 7 failed to return. I personally was involved in 3 of them. One of the ones that I took failed to return. Of course, we didn't know that they were for any particular raid or anything like that. But I well remember that one that I had looked as though it carried something underneath ready to be spun at high speed. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. The bomb was clamped between sort of two legs underneath the aircraft, and it was spun by an extra motor inside the fuselage and eventually released, and that was the technique that they used. But as I say, nobody really knew what they were for. I know when we took them over to Scampton, they didn't waste any time about taking them off us. We didn't even stop the engines before some of the RAF lads were in them and took them away, presumably for possible modification, I don't know. But we found out afterwards that these were the ones that were used for this particular raid.
How were you affected by the air raids, air attacks on Britain?
I don't think we were affected, really. Not that I can think of. I can't think of anything which affected us. I suppose occasionally we would go to aerodromes which had been bombed and as a result would probably be diverted to other aerodromes. But I can't say that we were really affected by bombing, in, as far as I can think of. No.
How did ATA treat you generally? What sort of leave did you get?
We used to have to take 3 days off in 15, if I remember correctly. I forget what sort of annual leave we had. I suppose it must have been a week or a fortnight. I really forget. But we used to have 3 days off in 15 altogether.
How yes. adequate was that?
Well, in my case, I found it adequate. I could cope with it. But I don't know. I think some people might have been glad of more at times.
And what about your rate of pay?
Well, by today's standard, pretty hopeless. But from what I can recollect, it wasn't too bad, perhaps 10 or 11 or 12 pounds a week. I can't remember the exact figure, but certainly adequate. I mean, I've come across hotel bills before now for, say, £1.50 or something like that, which, of course, is ludicrous by today's standard.
You said you lived in digs. Did ATA find these for you?
As a general rule, yes. But at the same time, we sometimes were not satisfied. We'd go out and scout around, find our own. In fact, that's what I did more often than not.
And what sort of rest facilities were provided by your ferry pool?
Well, we had a mess, a restroom, on the premises where we could relax, play cards, play billiards or snooker. Of course, if the weather was bad, there's no point in hanging around the aerodrome. We were invariably released. And in any case, when the day's aircraft had been delivered, we'd always be released as soon as the job was finished. It sometimes meant that we would finish late in the evening. But on the other hand, it's a case of the swings and roundabouts. Sometimes we'd finish quite early.
Did you have to have medical examinations?
Oh, yes. Every 6 months, if I remember correctly. Yes.
And quite how stringent were they?
Quite a thorough medical exam, yes. Yes.
Did you stay based at Ringway?
Most of the time. I did have one or two postings up to Kirkbride, which is in Cumberland. And I think I went to Prestwick for a short period. I also went to Harden, which is near Chester, for a time. But most of the time was at Ringway. After the war, when the organization was being run down, Ringway closed down, and most of us went over to Harden, which is Chester, as I say. And then eventually from Chester, right at the very end of the war, down to White Waltham.
Could you request posting?
To a certain extent, we could make our wishes known, and they were usually very obliging. They would endeavour to send somebody where they wanted to. I wouldn't like to say you could sort of demand it or anything like that, but by and large, it was such a friendly organisation that if anything could be done to ease domestic matters in any shape or form, they would do just that. Yes. Yes.
Can you remember the actual end of the war?
Yes. I was on holiday with my wife down in Torquay for VE Day. There were lots of celebrations going on. Everybody went stark staring mad, if I remember correctly. All the children were having parties. That's about all I can remember. I can't remember any real details about it.
How did you think it was going to affect your job?
Oh, well, as far as ATA was concerned, that was it. That was the end of flying. After ATA, ferrying was continued by 41 group of the RAF for a matter of a few months. But ATA finished, and then eventually 41 group told us that we had that our contracts were finished. Right after the end of the war, one of the biggest problems was rehabilitating some of the displaced people on the continent. And it was thought at one time that a few members of ATA would be invited to fly and service aircraft which were assisting in the rehabilitation of these displaced persons. And I put my name down for it, and a few of us were chosen. But in point of fact, it never materialized. And if my memory serves me correct, I received notice and 3 months' pay in lieu of notice for a job I never started, which was quite good. After that, I joined BOAC, which has an overhaul maintenance depot locally here in South Wales, and I was with them for a number of years on aircraft maintenance, aero engine maintenance.
What did you join as?
Up at BOAC? First of all, as a tester of aero engines, and then eventually as an inspector. I was there for a number of years.
What credit did they give to you for your work in ATA?
Oh, I had, like most of us, a letter from the Commodore thanking us for our work, saying that the powers that be appreciated what we had done. Very nice letter indeed.
How easy was it to transfer into BOAC?
It wasn't easy because, if I remember correctly, at that time they were possibly running down in staff. But I applied for a job, and I think I must have known somebody there who could pull a string or two. But anyway, I started work there. That's all I can remember.
Was there any organisation within ATA to assist in the finding of jobs?
Yes, there was, right at the end, but I don't think it was particularly successful in everybody's case. I don't think I had any success with it, no. No.
How did you feel overall about your service with ATA?
Well, I think it was a good job, and I think it was well done. I don't know about me personally, but ATA as a whole did a wonderful job, a fabulous job. It was very well done. There were some very, very clever people organising it. And I think they deserve far more credit than has been given in recent years.